This is Theatre Voice, and I'm David Benedict. There's a line in Nora Ephron's great New York movie When Harry Met Sally, the stage version of which begins previews at the Theatre Royal Haymarket on the 11th of February, where Carrie Fisher observes over dinner that restaurants are to people in the 80s what theatre was to people in the 60s. She's alluding to a time when it was plays, not movies, that made serious arts headlines, and one of the enduring sensations of 60s theatre was Edward Albee's Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, which exploded on stage at the Billy Rose Theatre, now renamed the Nederlander and home to the musical Rent, in 1962. That play put marital disharmony firmly on the theatrical menu, and 40 years on, Albee returns to coupling with a vengeance with The Goat or Who is Sylvia? In a decade, when the biggest noises on Broadway arrive courtesy of the amplification systems of carefully packaged mega-musicals, The Goat, a rare and daringly non-feel-good drama, was little short of a sensation. That play is now receiving its British premiere at the Almeida Theatre in a new production designed by Hildegard Bechler and directed by Anthony Page. Martin, played here by Jonathan Pryce, is the man who has everything. Lovely wife, lovely life. He's celebrating his 50th birthday and has just won both the world's most prestigious architecture prize and a commission to design a $27 billion city. But when his best friend Ross, Matthew Marsh, turns up to record a TV interview with him, it becomes clear that all is far from well. Martin has experienced an unexpected epiphany. He's been having an affair. It's love, her name is Sylvia, and she's a goat. And when his wife Stevie, Kate Fahey, and his 17-year-old gay son, Billy, Eddie Redmayne, find out, all hell breaks loose. Albee's astringent writing has always ricocheted between the comic and the caustic, but no serious playwright would anticipate a box office stampede with a play about bestiality. Yet Albee denies that this is what he is writing about. He argues his play is about love and loss, the limits of our tolerance, and who, indeed, we really are. So do we trust the teller or the tale? With me to discuss The Goat are Matt Wolfe, Kate Bassett and Mark Shenton. Albee's previous work at the Almeida was the world premiere of the play about the baby. That opened to largely lukewarm to bad notices over here. Matt Wolfe, where do you stand on the new play?
Well, I loved the play about the baby, so I may not be in sync with the crowd. I like this new play very much as well. It's different, I suppose, from a play about the baby in that that is much more willfully abstract. I mean, for one thing, the characters aren't named, whereas in this they do have names, and names that, in fact, have sort of ripple effects. I mean, you don't have a play called The Goat and call the son Billy without wanting some sort of snicker to pass through the crowd. I like this play enormously. When I saw it previously, I like it very much now. I think the sympathies and the, how would one describe, the sort of moral impetus of it falls slightly differently here for reasons that perhaps we can talk about. It doesn't land in quite the same way, but the play is still the play, and I'm quite taken with it. It isn't really a play about bestiality any more than it's a play about incest, although it addresses that. It touches glancing on both these taboo topics, but I think it's actually a play about transgression and how that sort of happens and how one deals with it and recoils from it and recovers from it, if one does.
Transgression, the recoiling therefrom, the difficulties of love, tolerance, is that what you saw, Kate Bassett?
Yes, I think that's what it's about. I think that's completely what it's about. I think it's sort of categories and crossing acceptable categories and what people accept as their moral rules. And Albee questions the different characters' moral rules. So the best friend, Ross, really can't take the fact that his best friend is sleeping with a goat, but has no problem with having slept with whores when he was married, etc., etc. And then there's the question of the son being gay and whether the main character, Martin, accepts that or doesn't. So it's questioning everyone's sexual and moral behaviour and who fits what category. I think the play is good. I think I'm slightly less taken with it than Matt. And I think that's partly to do with, as you said, where it's landed. And I get the feeling that it may have been seemed more shocking in America than here. But I also think it's, for me, I think it's something to do with the comedy in the play. And I think the comedy is wonderful in itself, but actually, for a large part of the play, made it less powerful for me emotionally.
Comedy, tragedy. Which side of the fence do you think Albie comes down on? Which side of the fence do you come down on, Mark Shenton?
I think it's both of those things and a lot more. I think what's interesting about this play is that it takes Albie in a different direction to the usual one. He normally goes into illusion, reality, game-playing in Virginia Woolf and the play about the baby particularly, and now in the play about the goat. In fact, this is real life. This is something that actually happens to people, and people really do fall in love with animals. It's not much discussed, but there's this wonderful scene in the play where he talks about the support group he goes to for people who... like him, are in love with goats and geese and other and dogs, and it's a very real and tangible situation. I think the play is utterly gripping and ultimately really wrenching, particularly at the end when the goat actually makes a posthumous appearance. Is really disturbing.
I do think that it's a much more emotional play than the sorts of things he's been writing for quite a long time. I mean, the play about the baby was criticised by a lot of people for being rather arch. It was full of emotive ideas about motherhood and children and relationships, much in the way that Virginia Woolf was. But that play, to me, did seem rather emotionally distant, although I admired it, and a lot of the plays in the 70s and 80s seemed to remove him from subject matter as if he was standing above it. I think the great strength of this play is that he is there. Also, something else I'd like to talk about. For me, one of the excitements of the play was that it was the return of metaphor to theatre. There seemed to have been an inordinate number of plays in the last 20 years in which playwrights debate an idea, and one character is pro and one character is anti, and someone's in the middle being confused, and you just get the exegesis of an idea. This play seems to me to be strong in that it's not really about a man having sex with a goat at all. It is about the limits of tolerance. It is about what you will put up with, what you can understand from the basis of your experience or not.
And you could argue that although, of course, it's been played literally in both productions I've seen, that it really isn't about a goat either, because if the subtitle of it is Notes Towards a Definition of Tragedy, and tragedy being rooted in the Greek word tragoidia or goat song, then clearly Albie, who loves, you know, verbal gamesmanship, loves, you know, puns, loves that sort of byplay, is having fun with the idea of, you know, where is tragedy rooted etymologically? Okay, it's rooted in this word. What does that word mean? Aha. Therefore, if we want to write a 21st century play that addresses that head on, here's a way to do it. But I would like to see actually someday a production of this play which plays it quite abstractly, because I think that would be very interesting, and I think that could land just as well.
Well, it's quite interesting. I think there are two contradictory arguments in that Mark is saying it's about reality, and you're saying it's a metaphor. And I think what's actually most interesting about the play, though I have a lot more cavils about it than I think you do, but I think he plays games with reality and metaphor. So there's a rather wonderful moment where he makes a joke with his wife early on before he's confessed anything, and they're joking about whether he has a mistress, and he says, oh yes, she's a goat, and they have a running joke about it. And then it eventually turns out it is a goat. There's a moment where he pulls a photo out of his wallet. Mm-hmm. And I thought at that moment, I thought, okay, we're going into surreal fantasy here, very Albie, you know, at the start he's set up as his memory is going, or he's got some sort of mental problem, he can't understand why he doesn't remember anything, and I thought, okay, we've moved into some sort of fantasy stroke dream here. And then you go back, and you gradually realise, no, it is a goat, and the whole play carries on, and there is indeed the, whatever it is, Animaholics Anonymous Club. And then at the end, for me, when the goat is brought on dead and has been killed as a kind of act of vengeance, it becomes the scapegoat, you know, the classic symbol of tragedy. And it was both real and symbolic, and I think that's interesting, and I found that last moment actually emotionally powerful.
I think that although I don't have to be convinced by the play because it won me over, I do think the strength of the ending, and there was an absolute frisson in the theatre when that moment happens. It's rather like that moment in art, which a lot of people are very sniffy about, the Yasmina Reza play. The moment at which they draw on the painting, the whole audience goes into shock, and you can feel it. And the reason that they go into shock is that actually so much of the writing has led you into the play and up to that point. And similarly, I think there's whatever one's doubts about bits of it, the strength, the cumulative strength of the writing of the goat is such that that moment has huge payoff, because let's face it, if you describe this play to people, it sounds preposterous, but actually it does seem to work.
It does, and there's something also very interesting about the preciseness of language, which also is a theme that is echoed in Virginia Woolf and in Play With About the Baby, where the couple war with each other on language and score points against each other constantly.
No, he's obsessed with that.
I mean, that's extremely funny, the precision of that, and yes, of course, the imprecision of feelings about love and all that, and the perfection of all of that is really an interesting contrast.
Yes, and Kate Fahey, the wife Stevie, refers time and time again to the way the game is played, and there's a bit where they're at full throttle, really having at each other, and one stops and says the other, nicely put. Mm. So there's always that bit where they're standing outside their vitriol and kind of assessing it, which is very George and Martha.
I mean, I think it's about, in some ways, the play is about language and communication and talking, and whether you're actually prepared to tell the truth or not, and confessing, and whether people want to know the truth. And I think they have a kind of theatrical game where they play roles, and they also have language games where they correct each other's language. And I think it's interesting that the main character Martin, is a linguistic pedant and always corrects whether people have got the plural form of words right. And yet he's the person who's confusing sexual categories. He's the person who doesn't know the difference between a woman and a goat. And so it's all about sort of, you know, knowing the right categories.
Of course, Martin isn't the one that really wants the secret out anyway. He's busted by his friend. And that's another kind of interesting thing, is that actually he's not there to tell the truth. He tells his friend in secret, and then is busted, as I said.
But Abbe does have a great, as you say, Kate, he has a field day with sort of just sketching in this rule-bound household. I mean, I love the fact that here's a family where the worst thing their 17-year-old gay son can say to his parents is, semanticist, you know, only an Albi. You've got to love it.
Can I just say something else about, when we were talking about that last moment when the goat was brought in, mm-hmm. and I did find that upsetting and moving, partly because Jonathan Pryce weeps with a kind of ferocity that's deeply distressing, and you don't know whether he says sorry, and you don't know what he's sorry for, or who he's sorry for, and there's a great ambiguity about that last moment, or if he's genuinely sorry. But there's something about the reality of the goat coming on was distressing, because there it is, dead, and it's very corporeal and real. I think the problem I had was the fact that the goat wasn't on at any other point. I think the problem for me was, it's again going back to, what is this play about? Is it about a goat or isn't it? And so there's a sort of Greek tragic thing where, you know, the atrocities off rule, where you never see him with the goat. It's all described. He's the reporter of it. And I think Albi is, in fact, kind of exploring Greek tragic rules there. But I think the problem is that in some ways it's abstracted, because what the character is talking about is how he's in love with the goat, and he's not interested in talking about the sex with the goat. And so it is in a way quite abstract, because he's talking about her as if she's a woman, and it's romantic. And for some reason, I mean, in French neoclassical tragedy, there was a bienséance, which was about sort of decency. And I think there's some sort of tension there, and that Albi is obeying that rule. It's all very decent. We don't see it. It's all off stage. And therefore, it somehow doesn't quite hit home with me until the goat actually came on. I didn't believe it. I believed it was, on some level, allegorical. You know, it's a generalization for aberrant sexuality, and therefore was a little more diffused and unemotional for me.
For me, that's its strength, because actually, if somehow you managed to do a staging in which you either saw, or somehow the sexual act was made more present and visible, it would be so difficult to remove yourself as an audience from that, to be able to kind of look at it in any other light other than, I assume, some kind of revulsion.
I don't think
that actually it would overbalance.
No, I mean, I don't think you can describe the sex or bring the sex on. I don't think you don't think it's a way of doing it theatrically that would not be unproblematic.
I mean, when I was thinking about this and doing some work in preparation for this, I was looking at another Albee play which uses animals, Seascape, mm-hmm. in which two lizards rise up from the sea, and there's a fantastic line in it which I fell over, which says, "Nice, isn't it, when the real and figurative come together?" And it seems to me that that's exactly what Albee has tried to do for the last 25 years, and actually he's done it in this play, right. and that's its strength, is that it does hover. And there's this really interesting feeling for me in this play where you sense an audience not quite sure where to put itself. It isn't a play in which you sit there at the beginning of the play and as soon as you know that this guy's having sex with a goat, you know what you think about that. It's sort of, you find yourself hovering, because Albee is bold enough as a dramatist to make you laugh at it, suddenly find yourself sympathising with the plight of different people, whether that's the gay son, or whether that's the outraged wife or the distressed husband. You find yourself in different relations to the actual event and the ideas that are being described, and that's really interesting, it seems to me, in theatre, rather than either you're for us or you're against us. It doesn't easily come down on one side of an argument or the other. I mean, in a way, I think that other critics have raised this, the problems of playing this to what is deemed to be an Almeida audience. I mean, I'm not sure that Almeida audience exists. It exists on a press night. Whether or not this play has an easy ride with an Almeida audience on every other night it performs there, I think is open to debate.
But what was interesting, I think, is how it played on Broadway with a Broadway audience on a Wednesday matinee, which is one of the times I saw it with the Wednesday matinee ladies.
That's the litmus test.
Absolutely. And it did play. Sally Field at that point was in it. I'd seen it with the original cast as well. It really took fire. I mean, yes, on one level it is a kind of domestic comedy, if you want to take it as such, and that Wednesday matinee audience might read it as such, but actually they delivered this really shocking story.
What do we think about the quality of the performances of both Stevie and Martin, in fact, and all four?
You're asking the wrong person about Martin, because I thought Bill Pullman in the Broadway production gave one of the best performances I've ever seen on a stage anywhere. I mean, it was an image of such total desolation, but by the end you did not know where to look. It was almost embarrassing.
I mean, I didn't see it, but it seems to me that Bill Pullman is rather brilliant casting.
It's brilliant because he's so normal.
Because he looks so normal and
it's
so lovely,
exactly,
and sweet,
right.
And he always plays the inoffensive guy that ends up with Sandra Bullock or whoever in movies. He's sort of blonde and nice and simple, whereas Price does play sort of neurotic from Lights Up.
Well, there's nothing. The thing about Bill Pullman was that he is innocence incarnate in a way, and Price is sort of sleazy and smarmy, like the engineer in you know, Miss Saigon. That's what he does. So Price couldn't hold a candle to Pullman in my book, but if I hadn't seen Pullman, I don't think I would feel that strongly.
Yeah, Kate, you haven't seen it before.
I haven't seen the new show. I thought most of the performances were excellent, actually. It's interesting, though. I'd be interested to see someone play it who seemed quintessentially innocent, because I think one of the most radical things about the play is you come away, well, you are quite persuaded by his feeling of non-guilt. He cannot accept that he's wrong, in categorically wrong. But I actually thought Jonathan Price in the opening scenes was clearly troubled and neurotic, but actually rather sweet and sort of ruffled, and I thought they had a beautiful kind of jokey, sweet, settled marital relationship that set up a rather endearing domestic scene. And so I think it was disturbing, but perhaps the utter desolation wasn't built as strongly in this production.
As everyone will have observed, Kate Fahey is Jonathan Price's real-life wife, and sometimes realist casting of that kind can backfire, because you don't have to act anything, you just assume that it's there because, hey, you're my husband or you're my wife, I don't have to act that. Do you think that the casting worked?
No, not at all. I actually, having seen it twice in New York with two different casts, and actually the other man who took over from Bill Irwin was a wonderful New York comic called Bill Irwin, who was also amazing, and another wonderful plain innocence about him. In this case, these two, they didn't register for me the intimacy or tension that the couples had in New York.
Well, and I have to rise to their defence. At first, I was ever so slightly worried by Kate Fahey because I thought, you're not really going for this. There are huge opportunities. There are vast laughs to be got, where she has lines about, you know, I haven't been cruising any farmyards lately and that sort of thing. And then I thought, actually, I can see that that's what would have happened on Broadway, and that if you play that late in the run to a standard Broadway house, you're going to kick that laugh from here to Yonkers, and actually you'll get it. Whereas, actually, it's much more impressive if you don't. And there are stage directions all over the script about her cold fury. And the fact is that every other line, it seems, one of them is correct in the other's grammar. They're not so lost in rage that they're getting explosive on it. And I think the play's written in very precise way, and that Kate Fahey was good. For me, however, the real knockout performance was Eddie Redmayne as the boy, who I think really, really was extraordinary, without sort of overplaying that awful sort of, oh, I'm the sensitive boy, I'm going to burst into tears at every moment and pull focus. It's very balanced.
I agree with you completely, but getting back to Kate Fahey for a second, I wasn't sure at all where she was going with this, because she seemed so cool and rather quiet. I thought, this is an odd play to do quietly, but in a way it was as if she was liberated from something that you would have to do on Broadway. I'm not criticizing what Mercedes Rule did, but there was a line laid on where I think the son or someone comes in and the set has just been trashed, and Stevie, the wife, says, we're redecorating. And of course on Broadway it got a huge laugh. At the Almeida it didn't get a single laugh at all, and I thought that was quite illustrative of the difference. The palpable improvement in casting in this production, I think, is the son, who I thought was absolutely thrilling, an amazing performance. And in a sense, you realize, why does he come up to his father with such urgency and passion and kiss him on the lips? Because there's a soulfulness that he has, that he sees in his father, in terms of his father's relationship with the goat. Martin describes the goat as soul. That's what he says the goat has. It's not sex, it's soul. And that's what the son shares.
And there, I'm afraid, we're going to have to leave it. Thank you very much.